If only life had a remote control, you could pause or rewind. Well, life doesn't always give you time to change the outcome, but prediabetes does. Take the 1-minute risk test today at doihaveprediabetes.org. Brought to you by the Ad Council and its prediabetes awareness partners.
Ukraine declares an end to fighting at its final holdout within the port city of Mariupol.
By fighting so hard for Mariupol, they prevented the fall of many other cities in Ukraine. And that is why they're so widely seen as heroes by the Ukrainians.
Plus, the FDA loosens import restrictions on baby formula in a bid to end a nationwide shortage. And as many investors sell the market dip, Warren Buffett is buying. We'll look at where he sees opportunity. It's Tuesday, May 17th. I'm Luke Vargas with The Wall Street Journal. Here's the AM edition of What's News, the top headlines and business stories moving your world today. Ukraine's government has declared an end to its combat mission in the port city of Mariupol, concluding months of bloody battle against Russian forces that ended with a dramatic siege against fighters and civilians taking refuge at an abandoned steel plant. Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky said in a video statement that fighters at the plant were being given medical aid, and he pleaded for their lives to be spared after they were allowed to leave. Ukraine's military said that 264 service members, 53 of them seriously injured, had been evacuated from the plant. We'll have more on what today's developments in Mariupol could signal about the future course of the war later in the show. The U.S. Food and Drug Administration has eased import rules for baby formula in an effort to alleviate shortages, encouraging overseas manufacturers to apply to ship their formula to the U.S. An FDA official said it could be weeks before the products come to store shelves in the U.S. The American baby formula market is dominated by three manufacturers, including Abbott Laboratories. On Monday, Abbott said it had reached an agreement with the FDA to reopen a Michigan plant where the company makes many formula products. Abbott had closed the plant in February after the FDA found bacterial contamination. Voters in five U.S. states will cast ballots in primary elections today. Several of the contests will provide the latest tests of former President Donald Trump's influence within the Republican Party, while others offer Democrats a choice between their party's liberal and centrist wings. Pennsylvania is the scene of late drama as both parties prepare to select nominees for an open Senate seat in one of the nation's most politically competitive states. We will have a full recap of the primary results tomorrow. The Biden administration says it is loosening some restrictions on flights to and from Cuba and reestablishing a family reunification program that had been suspended in recent years. The measures reverse a series of Trump-era policies that had largely cut off the island and its people from the U.S. The moves also come as Cuba faces what U.S. officials have described as the worst humanitarian crisis in three decades, which includes food and medicine shortages. The conditions have led to the largest wave of migration from Cuba this year since 1980, with some 35,000 Cubans crossing legally into the U.S. last month alone. And Elon Musk has said that his $44 billion bid for Twitter can't move forward until the company is clearer about how many of its accounts are fake. In a tweet early Tuesday, Musk said that, quote, yesterday, Twitter's CEO publicly refused to show proof of less than 5%. This deal cannot move forward until he does, Musk said. The stock market's recent performance has been bad news for most investors. But WSJ reporter Akane Otani says Berkshire Hathaway chairman Warren Buffett has been using the slump to spend big. And regulatory filings released last night show us where the Oracle of Omaha senses opportunity. And Akane joins us now with those details. Hi, Akane.
Thanks for having me.
Of course. So what do these latest disclosures tell us about the opportunities that Warren Buffett sees in the markets right now?
I had someone tell me that this is sort of his sweet spot. And I think that's really what we're seeing in the numbers. Berkshire spent about $40 billion in the first 3 months of the year. And that was after they largely sat on their cash pile and just saw their cash pile actually grow and grow and grow to a record in 2021, because they weren't really seeing opportunities to buy things for cheaper than they believed that they were valued. And then fast forward to this year, things have been incredibly volatile in the markets. We've seen across the board selling in the stock market, and that has really given Berkshire an opportunity to come in and ramp up its stock investments again. So we really saw them buy a lot of different names across different sectors, including Occidental Petroleum, Chevron, HP, Activision. So you have some tech in there as well as some financial names like Citigroup and Ally Financial. So a lot of different stock purchases across varied industries.
And Akane, what do those energy investments in particular in companies like Occidental and Chevron perhaps signal about how Warren Buffett and Berkshire view the broader state of the economy right now?
So the interesting thing about the energy play is that energy had had a really, really good run this year. And at the same time, Warren Buffett is known to be a value investor. He's known to be looking for bargains. He doesn't like buying things that are expensive. So I was asking some folks, why would he buy when energy is already doing so well for the year? And a couple of investors I spoke to were saying they think that that's basically a reflection of a long-term view that inflation is going to be here for maybe a lot longer than markets are currently anticipating. Obviously, he's a very long-term investor, and so he is probably more in a position than other folks to hold on to these energy shares for quite some time. So we're really seeing, I think, in that, perhaps some views on how he is seeing inflation.
That was Wall Street Journal reporter Akane Otani. Akane, thank you as always for the update.
Thanks for having me.
Coming up, we'll hear from WSJ Chief Foreign Affairs Correspondent Yaroslav Trofimov in Ukraine about the latest developments in the war there, including from the city of Mariupol. That story after the break.
If only life had a remote control, you could pause or rewind. Well, life doesn't always give you time to change the outcome, but prediabetes does. Take the 1-minute risk test today at doihaveprediabetes.org. Brought to you by the Ad Council and its prediabetes awareness partners.
After withstanding a long siege, Ukrainian forces in the Azovstal steel factory in Mariupol have been ordered to stop fighting. Wall Street Journal Chief Foreign Affairs Correspondent Yaroslav Trofimov joins us now from the Ukrainian capital of Kyiv to discuss where this development could leave the broader war in Ukraine. Yaro, thank you for being with us. Welcome.
Thank you. Great to be on the show.
It's great to have you. So the battle for this steel plant in Mariupol has been pretty much raging since the start of the war. If Russia is able to finally take it over, what impact could that have on the next steps of this war?
Well, I mean, what's happening now is kind of inevitable. The defenders of Mariupol played a huge role in slowing down the Russian advance. I mean, they attracted 20,000 Russian soldiers. And by holding the city for so long, the city was surrounded in the first day of the war, practically, they have managed to allow the Ukrainian military to create defenses to prevent the fall of other cities, such as Zaporizhia, and to really consolidate their lines. So by fighting so hard for Mariupol, they prevented the fall of many other cities in Ukraine. And that is why they're so widely seen as heroes by the Ukrainians.
I understand that the Ukrainian defense of Mariupol has bought time for Ukraine's army to focus attention elsewhere. But would a victory there not also free up Russia now to expand operations elsewhere?
The Russians, after they ceased active attempts to take over that plant a couple of weeks ago, they've already reallocated most of the forces in Mariupol. So the combat units that were still there, and they were very much battered by the fighting, have been sent to the front lines. So militarily, this is not really an important position. It's more about the symbolism of what happens to these fighters. And they are seen as national heroes by the Ukrainians, and so their lives are very much important. And as Zelensky said when he announced the deal, we need our heroes alive, not dead.
Yaro, let's pull back a bit. What is the broader state of the war currently, especially with the ongoing Ukrainian counteroffensives against Russians in the east of the country?
Well, I mean, there are basically four different theaters of war. There is the war around Kharkiv, which is the second largest city in Ukraine, and sort of in the northeast. There is a war in the Donbas, where Russia declared it to be the main priority of the campaign and where it wants to take over the entirety of Donbas, which it does not recognize as part of Ukraine. Then you have the front lines in the south, in the Zaporizhia and in the Kherson and Mykolaiv regions that have been basically static for the last month and a half. So in Kharkiv in the north, the Ukrainians have had major successes. They have repulsed the Russian forces that used to be basically at the entrance to Kharkiv just a couple of weeks ago out of field artillery range, which means that Kharkiv can resume normal life. They're restarting public transport. They're restarting the subways. People who live in shelters in the subway can go home. So that's a major victory for the Ukrainians. And they're now pushing the Russian forces all the way to the Russian border there. The situation is much more difficult than Donbas, where the Ukrainians are struggling to hold territory, where the Russians are slowly but surely advancing, but much, much more slowly than they had planned. And they have taken a couple of towns, but they're far, far from achieving their goal of taking all of the Ukrainian-controlled Donbas so far.
We have heard from the likes of NATO Secretary General Jens Stoltenberg in the last few days that Ukraine could actually win this war. Can it? And what would victory actually look like?
All these victories so far that were achieved by the Ukrainians were achieved without any Western heavy weapons. Now Ukrainians are receiving modern Western artillery. So the Ukrainian military is getting new capabilities that could allow it to change the tide of this war. And that's what the Ukrainians are accounting for. That's the reason for all this optimism among Ukraine's supporters. So in a way, in this war of resources, Ukraine has the supply that is coming from its allies, whereas Russia's ability to manufacture new weapons is limited by the sanctions and by its own industrial base. So in a way, in this war of attrition, Ukraine actually has a better long-term perspective. As far as what is a victory, well, I think anything short of full Russian withdrawal to the lines of February 23, the day before the war began, would not be seen as acceptable to the Ukrainians. Now the question is, what happens to the areas of Donbas? What happens to Crimea? And I think there, it's an open question. It's hard to imagine the Ukrainians making a military push to seize Crimea. Donbas is another matter. If the Ukrainians can, they will probably try to push into the parts of Donbas that they didn't control since 2014.
That was Wall Street Journal Chief Foreign Affairs Correspondent Yaroslav Trofimov joining us today from the Ukrainian capital, Kyiv. Yaro, thank you so much for the update and be well.
Great to be on the show. Thank you.
And finally, it's time for something completely different by design. Traditional ice cream flavors like chocolate, strawberry, and vanilla are increasingly having to make space for savory competition. Think everything from everything bagel to Gouda and cranberries or sesame and plum. WSJ reporter Katie Dayton says that far from being a contrarian trend, savory ice cream is gaining in popularity with a younger demographic, according to market research company Mintel. And what business doesn't like the prospect of growing its sales?
They found that 13% of American adults said an addition of savory elements would encourage them to buy more ice cream. And even if it's not for you, you might sort of really appreciate the texture or engage some brand awareness. Ice cream makers, since the beginning of time, really, have always tried like weird and wacky flavors to stand out in the market. And the market is incredibly crowded right now.
Let me just say, I tried some black sesame and ginger ice cream the other night, and it was really good. And that's What's News for Tuesday morning. We'll be back tonight with a new show. I'm Luke Vargas with The Wall Street Journal. Thanks for listening.